You're listening to A Stranger Podcast, www.thestranger.com.
Hi, this is Jen Graves, and you're listening to Invisible, the Stranger's Weekly Conversation with People in Art. I'm here with Stefano Catalani. Hi.
Hi, Jen.
And you are, what is your title, actually, at the Bellevue Arts Museum?
Curator.
Curator, okay. And we're going to talk a little bit about your vision for the Bellevue Arts Museum, a little background. The curatorial vision at the Bellevue Arts Museum has been up in the air over the years. It sort of grew, the museum grew out of a craft fair, you know, a very venerable and by now very large craft fair, and then sort of took a turn, got a designer architect involved, and was much more focused on contemporary art, and the designer architect, of course, Stephen Hall. And then at a certain point, it just collapsed, and the building actually closed, and Bellevue Arts Museum was sort of in shambles. And Michael Monroe was brought in to kind of transform the place. And at this point, the museum is no longer called Bellevue Art Museum, but called Bellevue Arts Museum. And it looks at the intersection between art, design, and craft, if I'm getting that right.
You're right, yes.
And Michael Monroe is the chief curator?
Michael Monroe is executive director and chief curator.
Okay. And when did you come on?
I started when we reopened, June 18, 2005. So I've been there for 3 years now, mm-hmm. As of June. And it's been quite of an interesting experience to work with Michael and resuscitate his museum.
Yeah. Your history is in contemporary art, right?
Yes. But it was very appealing to me. When I was offered a position to accept the job and challenge myself in these investigations between an overlapping of art, craft, and design, because this is the focus of the Bellevue Arts Museum at the moment. The S makes the whole difference. We are a different animal from the previous museum. We have a different mission, and we're only 3 years old. We have been working very hard to reestablish the name of the museum, and I think we are succeeding. I feel very good about it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right now, there are three shows up. There are each of them is a solo show, and you could look at them as three shows that work together as well as three solo shows. But there's a solo show by Mandy Greer, Seattle artist. There's one by Anna Skipska, and where is she based?
Anna Skipska is based in Seattle.
Is she? Okay. So, and there's one by Sherry Markowitz, also based in Seattle.
Yes.
And those are going to be up mostly through the summer. The Mandy's show comes down in August, and a show by John Grady, another Seattle artist, goes up. I presume that you have, in large part, been involved in organizing those shows, especially Mandy's show.
Yeah, the Sherry Markowitz exhibition is organized by Wichita State University, right. Chris Bruce, and it's a traveling show, and I was very pleased to be able to bring it to Bellevue, just to give you a little bit of background. Then Mandy Greer is a Seattle-based artist like Sherry Markowitz, and her work is very much has an element of craftsmanship and labor that was very fascinating for me. And it seemed to be the perfect complement to the Sherry Markowitz exhibition. And so even Diana Skipska. Somehow the three artists are three women, three generations, three different generations, three Northwest artists, even though no one of the three was born in Seattle. Sherry's from Chicago. Mandy was born in Germany, and I think her father was in the Air Force, and she moved around the country. And Anna is from Poland. Mm-hmm. But I think the three of them have roots here in Seattle, and they are part of the art scene and the cultural discussion. So it was very interesting to bring them together. And all of them, even though they're working with different medium, they're all somehow, they share something. Their vision or their process share a process of accretion, of construction, of building up using little elements and the line in particular. Mm-hmm. You know, string of beads for Sherry and crochet for Mandy, and also the glass rods for Anna. So, yeah, I like what you said, that there are three solo shows, but in a way when the public come to museum and they move between the second and the third floor, they realized that the three shows come together as one bigger idea that is being explored. Mm-hmm. So I think we've been very successful. People is loving it. People are loving it.
Mm-hmm. Your English is great.
Okay, thank you.
What about the, you know, this idea of accretion you're talking about? I'm really interested in this because, of course, there is something very obsessive going on in the museum right now. What can you talk a little bit about what's coming with John Grotti?
I don't want to say too much about John because I don't want to. John Grady's show is opening on August 26, and John and I have been working together on this project for about a year. We will have definitely one piece that was, for me, was an eye-opener on his work, which was Cleave. And then all the new works will be works that are still in progress, that he's still working. I know that one of them is in a Slot Canyon in Utah at the moment, abandoned there. And if John is listening to this, he will know why, because I felt like he just left it in the Slot Canyon and put no signs, so everyone could go there and steal it. So what I'm going to put in my galleries, I don't know. Even in that case, there is this idea of accumulation of the history and the passing of time and nature that somehow works on the pieces and leaves signs. So that's also something that I found fascinating in his work, and the craftsmanship that also for John is paramount. I mean, mm-hmm. John's work wouldn't be this fascinating if he didn't put this incredible amount of time just to make it the way he wants it, which is mm-hmm. simply perfect, mm-hmm. because it's the way he wants it. That's, mm-hmm. I think, my definition of perfection. Mm-hmm. I think also for Mandy Greer, there is this incredible compulsive need for her hands to constantly be kneading and crocheting and moving. Mm-hmm. She is a major in ceramics, but in the interview in the catalog that we produced for this exhibition, she says that she couldn't really... She moved away from ceramics because my impression is she couldn't really stand those pauses between firing, and then you have to wait, mm-hmm. and you have to glaze, and then fire again. Mm-hmm. These pauses were sort of breaking her, this stream of energy and creativity that she has, and so she just need to do something that she can constantly have her hands working, and knowing that she will create something that is, you know, out of small gestures, is going to accumulate into something like Dario Lucia, which is just incredible. Mm-hmm. It's a 1,000 square feet room full of crocheted forest and this incredible pelican. So
mm-hmm.
it was nice to work with her, even though we couldn't see the show. I didn't have a full vision of the piece until the piece was installed.
Because it was too large to be installed anywhere else in rehearsal, right?
It was a piece that she built over, I think, 12 months. I think her son Hazel was a year and a half or 20 months when she started. Now it's three, so it's like, so the piece took half of the life of Hazel. It's another baby in a way, yeah. And that's that element of time is very important for me also in defining her work. But yes, we saw the piece installed for the first time in the gallery. Mm-hmm. It was a little bit of a bet, and which I wanted to take. Mm-hmm. And the publication also was produced locally because we wanted to wait for the piece to be installed and all the walls to be painted so that we could take shots, mm-hmm. and have the, you know, rather than studio shots, they would have been just details and
right.
close-ups and would have made no sense.
Because
right. you really have to you have to plunge into the space there, mm-hmm. to enjoy this idea of being in the Milky Way, in mm-hmm. a way.
One thing that's nice about this exhibition too is that it sounds, if you haven't visited, it sounds like it's just one large installation, but in fact it's two large installations and a bunch of smaller works and a video, and so it does give you a good sense of her trajectory over time, which is really nice. I haven't seen that before. I want to ask you a really kind of basic question that you might be tired of being asked. I think everyone who's associated with Bellevue Arts Museum is probably tired of being asked this, but I think it's an interesting and live question. What is craft? What is art? What is design? How do you even think about that sort of thing? I mean, You know?
I'm going to give you a...
And when you're dealing with artists, does it come up? You know, I mean...
No, it doesn't. Mm. It doesn't anymore. That's what I like it. When... I'll give you maybe an evasive answer, but you can take that. What happened is this. I have docents sometimes, or I have patrons of the museum who come and they approach the docents or approach the staff like me if they see me in the gallery. And I've been asked this question before, like for Mendigreer, let's say, is this art or is this craft? And I say, well, this is exactly the question that I want to ask you. I think the role of the museum is, since we're trying to investigate the relationships or overlapping between art and craft in the contemporary art scene, art general, this big umbrella, I feel that the role of the museum actually is to pose this question back. And I mean, of course, we could go into this trite conversation about what is craft versus what is art versus what is design. But my role, at least what I'm trying to do, my vision for the Bellevue Arts Museum is exactly to showcase, display, work with artists and give them the chance to explore their own ambitions also in terms of scale, space, and but that artists that are always poised between the art and the craft, or the art and the design, or art, craft, and design, where these elements come together. Mm-hmm. We had an exhibition last fall, winter, which was Dinh Kiu-le, Tapestry of Memories, this Vietnamese-American artist, mm-hmm. Vietnamese-American-Vietnamese, since he went back to Vietnam 10 years ago. For me, he was the perfect example of an artist in which art and craft are blurred to a point that is really difficult to separate them, because he weaves together with this traditional Vietnamese grass mat weaving technique, these photographs, these large photographs. He was at the Venice Biennale about 5 years ago, and he's internationally famous, many museums all around the world, but we were honored to work with him. But what he does, simply weaving these photographs together, he blends literally and metaphorically art and craft. Mm-hmm. The craft element is important to really give physical structure to the work. I mean, the work wouldn't be a tapestry otherwise. And it's a tapestry literally, but also metaphorically, because he was weaving fictional images of the Vietnam War with the real images. So in a way that, again, reality and fiction are blurred to a point that you're questioned about what you really know about what happened. Mm-hmm. But for me, the craft element there was also a cultural signifier. That's the craft is what he learned when he was 5, 6 in Vietnam, and that's what his mother taught him to do. Mm-hmm. And that's why he decided not to paint, despite his fascination with the Northern European Renaissance painters, but just to do what he knew, what his hands knew what to do. Mm-hmm. So for me, this speaks of the time, I think, in which we live, and also craft becoming, because it's associated with traditions, becoming, for many people who have relocated or moved, I moved here. That's why maybe I have a sensibility for this, in a way. But craft being linked to tradition become also a way to bring this tradition and this history, this personal history, into the bigger milieu or cultural environment in which these artists are moving. Mm-hmm. So I like that. I like to explore when craft is not just a pure formal aspect, even though the museum explored those elements, but also when it becomes something more, convey a history, a personal vision of the world of the artist. And that speaks to many people, because mm-hmm. how many of us have moved? Mm-hmm. I did. Mm-hmm. From a country to another one. So, mm-hmm. So I think what I'm trying to do, maybe it's not clear, but it will become clear. We're only a 3 years old museum. You know, we were just born yesterday. We are toddlers. We're. I like also the fact that we are somehow exploring the whole gamut of possibilities that craft or art and design offers. So we can have shows that are very formal about craft, and where maybe what Matthew Kangas in an article of probably 20 years ago he called the fetishism of the material. Mm-hmm. But there are still craftsmen who are really fascinated by the material, and they mm-hmm. their work is driven by the material. So this is something that we want to explore, because as a matter of fact, because they exist and they do work, they're part of the cultural life of this country, mm-hmm. of the Northwest. But on the other end of the spectrum, I also want to work with artists who are using craft, well, maybe to make a leap to something else, mm-hmm. and talk about their culture, because craft is related to tradition, or maybe they don't let themselves to be driven by the material, but they use a material, which is a craft material, maybe, not as an end, but as a means mm-hmm. to something else. Mm-hmm. So it's a very fine line, and I don't have an answer. I don't have a very sharp mm-hmm. definition. And I actually like to be this sort of animal where, we, you know, it's like an embryo. We're growing. Who knows? Mm-hmm. We still have a tail, but we can become a human being. You know, it will be reabsorbed. I don't know. It's fine. It is. I feel that as a curator, I'm experimenting as much as an artist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think sometimes people think a curator, like a critic, have a, you know, a black and white vision of the world, and they are all so full of themselves and they know exactly what is wrong and what is right. I like to work with the artists. I'm very humble from this point of view. You know, I really want to learn from them, but as they are experimenting and exploring new languages or new possibilities, I feel that also as a curator, I want to have that possibility to explore. I don't have the truth in me. I don't know. I live in the flow of time and space in which everyone lives, and so I want to work with the artists to allow them to express themselves at their best. So I'm sort of an interface, and also start a conversation with the public to say, these artists are saying this. My museum is giving them the chance to express themselves. So let's all have a conversation about this rather than me telling you what it is.
What about your background? You're from a medieval town. It's very exciting.
It is?
Yeah. Talk about that. How did you get to where you are? I mean, what did you pass through? What's your history? What have your commitments been to?
I come from classical studies in Italy. I come from a small village outside of Rome, 40 kilometers southeast of Rome on the mountains. It's a medieval village on a ridge, a small, tiny, teeny versions of Orvieto. If anyone has been in Italy, they will know what I'm talking about. And 5,000 people. There is a big castle in the middle, and all the houses just cluster around it for protection. I studied in Rome, and then I started curating in the mid-90s, working in Rome with two galleries, with a gallery in Naples, and then I worked with the National Museum of Fine Arts in Malta for about 3 years as a guest curator. And then my private life brought me to Seattle directly. Many people say, oh, you came to Seattle from New York, right, or Los Angeles. No, it was a direct flight, Rome-Seattle. And then here in Seattle, I started to kind of, it was an interesting, you know, switching continents and switching cultures is it's an amazing experience because you start from scratch. You know, people, sometimes you can present your credentials and say, I worked with this gallery, I studied in this university. They don't know where you know, it's not like, say, I come from one of the Ivy League's university. They don't know who you're talking about. So that was actually, I felt like pure at a certain point. It was just a tabula rasa. It was just a blank slate, and I could start over. And who have to thank, let's say? I have to thank a lot of artists who I started to, around 2002. I came in 2001, right after September 11, but was the end of the year, so October. 2002, I spent it just going around and looking for art and trying to understand what was going on in Seattle. And 2003, I was selected for the Bamba shoot.
Mm-hmm.
I have to thank Yoko. Now she's at the Fry, but at the time she was running the program, and she gave me on the Northwest rooms, the bigger room. So that was a good year. There was Rhonda Howard with Fashion is Art, and Mandy Greer had a piece in that.
Mm-hmm.
Fashion is Human Nature, when mm-hmm. she transforms from a bear, a circus bear, into a princess parrot.
Through a striptease.
Yeah, that's what one of our security guards defined it. I don't know if it's a striptease. It's a real transformation. it's interesting, you know. It's the power of garments, also how putting mm-hmm. a new dress or some sort of garments, you can actually put on a new identity.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very fascinating video. It's only 6 minutes, but if the public missed it 6 years ago or mm-hmm. 5 years ago, they have to come to the museum to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in the I think Rainier room, I don't know, with the Last Judgment project, and that, in a way, that project set up my place at the table in Seattle. And then I worked for a commercial gallery for about a year, and then I met Michael Monroe, and I'm at the museum.
Who were the artists you were first interested in when you first started studying?
Here in Seattle?
Mm. No, way back.
Oh. mostly photography.
Hmm.
I know. Mostly photography. I remember Tracy Moffat, Australian, Maria Zuppardi, another Australian artist, Cindy Sherman, a lot of Italian photographers, Oliviero Toscani, which is a commercial photographer but also very controversial, Margot Quannight, which was on your podcast, I think, a couple of weeks ago. She spent 2 years at Fabrica, which is was founded by Oliviero Toscani in Treviso. So mostly photography and I don't know why. Now I'm kind of like switching. I still like photography a lot, but I found that, and this is not because it's not prepared, I like clay. And I like artists who work with clay, not just craft people, but I like the plasticity and the possibilities that clay seems to offer.
For example?
Good figure. Howard Cutler, who died 20 years ago, Jeffrey Mitchell, clay that doesn't look like clay, I think, but he really pushes the envelope with clay. Ben Waterman, he was just reviewed by, I saw the Drop City Gallery show with his piece, which I don't remember the title. Ben, you will forgive me for this, but I think it was Reckoning of a Mile or something like that.
So, that sounds right.
Yeah, 16,000 and some nails. So I like that. I like, and also there, you know, the labor and the process that becomes very fascinating for me. When I came to Seattle, I just started to. I remember going to the Venus Building. There were lofts, and that's where I had many artists. Many of the artists that were in my first show ever here in Seattle were from the Venus. Susie Lee, she was included. At the time, she was still a student.
She was in The Last Judgment?
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
She's not in the catalog because she didn't deliver me the photographs in time.
Oh.
But... it's okay. I think she's doing well now. She's doing great. So, but that was interesting. You know, I remember just working with the with this artist and Kathy McClure. She was in the show. It also was not just Northwest artists, but also several artists from Italy or from Germany. People that I knew that I decided to, or New York, like Steve Taylor, amazing photographer.
What do you think drives you as a curator most?
I like to be enticed by the object more than by, or whether it's a painting or it's a photograph, but I like to see the object, quote-unquote, well-crafted. I really get disappointed when there's a strong concept but is poorly or, realized or poorly constructed or fabricated or poorly given a shape. And because at that point for me it seems that the concept was more important for the artist, and at that point just their inability to translate their ideas into something that is has a physicality, that's really, it's a turn down for me. I like John Grady's work for that reason. I like Mandy Greer's work for that reason. I like Sherry Markowitz's work for that reason. It's about the materiality, the physicality, but also there must be good craftsmanship. Of course, something to say. You know, there must be something to say. But it's like reading a good book. You know, the words are always the same. We all use the same words, but a well-crafted verse or prose is better than a poorly written book. So, for me, that's what I'm saying. The story can be the same, but if it's, you know, how many ways can be told. So I like to, that's what attracts me. And when I go around, I try to trust a lot my gut feeling. Sometimes something captures my attention or my my eye, and is a gut feeling, and I know that I like it for some reason. And then sometimes you meet the artist, you talk to the artist, what they tell you is actually destroying the gut feeling you had, because they, but you know, the words are sometimes in the way, they get in the way. Mm-hmm. But I always go back to that first gut feeling. I always trust it, always, because I know that really is based on these sort of mechanisms that I have in place inside of me that make me feel this piece was good for these reasons. So whatever the artist might tell me that can destroy that beautiful impression, I always go back to the, because also, you know, artist statement or art, what the artist say sometimes is also part of their projection. You know, I know they're gonna hate me for this, but it's kind of a fictional work of art, their words or their artist statement. They want to do something, but what they do with their hands not necessarily match.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's better. So that's the fine line, I think, also for a critic like you. You know, when you interview an artist, how much you take from what they're saying, how much you take from the work.
Mm-hmm. That's the question. But thank you so much for your time,
Stefano. Thank you.
I really
this
appreciate it.
This was a pleasure.
It was a pleasure. You've been listening to Invisible.
Thanks for listening.